Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email.
Jumping horny toads! That fur-bearing varmint done stole me coffee! Need another!
This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require money. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please buy Sam a coffee via the coffee.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material needs. Special thanks go to our first coffee angel, Juanita Paz Chalacha. Except those wishing to remain anonymous, benefactors will be announced in the final credits. And thank you truly for listening.
Lockpins out!
Lift the gate!
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. Our 52nd production, this is episode 19.
This is book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Here we continue Chapter 17. Marshal Garnett sat behind a table in the Magian Alliance Athenium and stared confidently at Gawain.
Southwest. Calron is headed down the main road toward Raven Point, just like before.
Did the Archduke offer any help other than pointing the way?
Gawain was well aware of Calron's status as former pet mage for the royal official.
No. He said the mage had broken into his keep and stolen a horse and provisions. In the middle of the day, with his hirelings guarding the walls and gates.
Have to try breaking into that one myself.
Thasgar leaned back and propped his boots upon the desk edge.
The Archduke keeps plenty of fine horse in his stables.
For the first time since before the Enchanter's journey to the other world, Gawain, Flayna, Clough, Thasgar, and Gon were working as a group again, trying to piece together a strategy in their pursuit of the fugitive mage. Ablui was now a welcome addition to the group. His humor and warmth endeared him to each, while his insights brought them even closer together. Gawain had taken quiet note of this last fact, and found it curious how his comrades had seemed more open, emotionally, and how they appeared to trust Ablui implicitly, something in the priest's aura offering understanding objectivity. Nothing like the confessor chambers of the old religions he had heard about, rather, more like confiding in a close, trusted friend or relative. For, unlike the priests of the belief of the ancients, Ablui did not scorn or condemn or even offer unsolicited advice. He simply listened, in some cases commiserated, or helped the one confiding in him to laugh at themselves or... Sometimes Gawain wasn't sure. But however Ablui did what he did, it was bringing new depths to the mutual trust, love, and understanding in the group. No doubt this mysticism associated with the priest had a lot to do with his being a high initiate of the Freethinkers. And yet, above all this were his advice and actions in the last confrontation with Calron, and his unusual awareness of the mystic powers at work when Gawain was trapped in the other world. Comforted with the priest's presence, the enchanter turned his thoughts back to the problem at hand.
How accurate is this information?
We're relying on Trimble's spell on the wrist shackles for the most part, but I've also had three of my best scouts confirming his specific direction. After a meandering trail leaving Laune's keep, he headed for the southwest road and has been on it since.
It'd be nice if Chaney and hers were here to help.
That's not an impossibility, my friend. Gawain looked over at where the dwarf was settling himself on a thick cushion placed in his chair. Though she has returned to Gramont at her father's behest for her investiture as heir to the throne, she will be returning within the moon.
Investiture? Chania will be a queen someday?
Seeing the nods around the table, Thasgar blinked in amazement.
Princess or queen, we cannot wait for her to get back. We got to hunt Calron now.
We shall. And with her help, Calron's run toward Ravenpoint and beyond makes that possible. Gawain unrolled a parchment map of the Old Kingdom and traced his finger along various possible routes. Calron won't stay in Rue. The death mark will be well known by the end of this moon. He can't head for territory accessible by ship and escape to sea. Again, news of his deeds has already been spread to all known villages and outposts. Everyone will be looking out for him. I believe he will head for the marshy lands. Therefore, Chania can sail to the Dreadmire coast and, with the crew and sea troops on her ship, start a hunt for him from that point via smaller boat in the channels or on land. Thusly, we will approach him from two sides. If she's unsuccessful in locating him, hopefully she'll find and join up with us. Trimble and I can communicate via our crystals until Chania arrives here from her investiture. At that point, she can make her decision and choose a specific destination for either pursuit or a meet with us.
If we do have to meet in the marsh, what's the most probable time she'd make the coast?
No later than the next new moon.
That's 2 quarters, roughly.
Ablui leaned forward to peruse the map.
And from these markings, there's rough terrain and meandering river paths in the marsh, making, at worst, another quarter's time locating him before Chania would meet us.
What could he be looking for in the southwest? There's little civilization past Ravenport, outpost villages notwithstanding.
Clough half smiled at Flayna. The fewer people he encounters, the less chance of our catching up with him until he's ready for a confrontation. He may even elicit help from the druids. If they don't see the shackles on his wrists, they won't know he's a fugitive.
What's in the Dreadmire that he might want? Certainly ain't any little girls in there for him to hurt.
As with the rest of the townsfolk, news of Calron's murder attempt had shocked and infuriated the group of friends, and they were determined to see that justice was meted out. The marshal's death mark decree made that task all the easier. Looking at the others for possible suggestions, Gawain finally shrugged at his dwarven friend. I suppose if he gets that far, we'll find out.
I am unfamiliar with most of this land.
Ablui waved a hand across the map, then leaned back in his chair.
What kind of animals are we likely to encounter down there?
Swamp dragons are a possibility, though their lairs are easily avoided. They tend to nest on high, dry ground where they can dig caves and protect their young.
True dragons or wyverns?
Dragons. We don't see many wyverns around these parts.
What else?
The water creatures tend to be larger than you'd expect. My druid friend Retwal thinks it's due to the warmer waters, gars and frogs and such.
How big?
Retwal mentions he had seen one gar that could easily bite a man in two. Needless to say, Calron would solve a lot of our problems by swimming in the marsh. The gars ignore the occasional rafts of the druids, I'm told, because they think the rafts are just floating logs, a bit of druidic magic, so we'll be borrowing a raft if we get that far. The room fell quiet as the group considered everything that had been said, the only sound that of Trimble in the main chamber scolding his pinchwing wardmate, Muff.
Down from there.
Are there any other questions? Heads shook, each member looking to the others. Any disagreement?
None.
Very well. Gawain slapped his hand on the map. We start our chase after the bastard toward Raven Point. Rubbing the sores on his wrists, Calron cursed Trimble for the 100th time and spat into the fire.
Trimble, that little punk.
Worse, he could sense a subtle aura of magic on the damned things and wondered what it might be. Since Laune had severed the disenchantment chains with his grandfather's sword, Calron had experienced no difficulty whatsoever in using his magic.
So what is this on the shackles? Nothing helpful of that, I can be sure.
Scowling with disgust, he kicked the largest log on his fire and watched the sparks scatter upward into the overhanging tree branches. This reminded him of the fire powders he had retrieved from the Archduke's keep. While in service to Laune, he had always maintained a sizable stash of the stuff. Fortunately, no one at the keep knew of them, or how to use them, so they had gone unnoticed for reeds. Not just useful reagents for making terrific short-lived blazes, the powders were volatile enough to be beneficial in planned confrontations. And this time, he wouldn't make the mistake of hiring underlings and entrusting the expensive powder with them.
No, my dear Gawain.
He stared grimly into the flames.
No matter how long it takes, we shall meet again. And I shall have the upper hand and my ultimate revenge.
With the reflexes of a hunted man, Calron jerked his head toward the noise his steed made as it champed noisily on its supper of coarse grain. Discerning nothing to worry about, he looked back at the fire and returned to his thoughts. Reasoning that the dragon stone was what gave the enchanter an unfair advantage over him, he had decided to seek out a dragon. The only territory where they were known to habitat was the Dread Mire, and yet he did not expect a great serpent to be all that interested in doing anything other than eking him on first sight. Therefore, he planned to exploit the services of the druids into talking with one. Members of that religion were reputed to have a discipline, an ability in communing with nature and her creatures. And with most of the druids being women, he expected little problem in charming favors out of them. For the moment, however, he had other concerns, namely those fools following him.
They must know I'm free of the chains, else I'd be captured again.
Guessing they delayed catching up with him because they had no immediate plan for dealing with his magic, he considered ways of delaying them further, perhaps even discouraging them completely. Remembering the den of mountain men he had befriended, he smiled sinisterly.
There's nothing like a small pack of the brutes on a rampage to run off any creature that possesses half the sense the gods gave a horse. Worse, if those mountain men happen to be armed with a few minor magics, they'll most certainly discourage any more trackers.
An added advantage for him would be getting to their cave, The side trip would take him off his southwesterly trail for a couple of days and confuse the lawmen following him. His next moves now planned, the dark mage allowed himself to relax as he sat up and dug into his pack of provisions for some dried meat.
The game is on again, and I am its master.
Taking out a few strips of leathery venison, he then wrapped them around a green stick and held them over the fire to soften them. As the fat oozed and bubbled, he imagined himself holding Trimble's wrists over the flames as punishment for the cursed shackles, the first in his long list of reprisals for everything he had suffered. Chapter 18.
It's certainly been quiet on the road this time.
Amblui reclined against a tree near the campfire, his cloak folded under him for a cushion, his staff on the ground beside him.
You must have discouraged quite a number of prospecting thieves last time. It reminds me of the King's Road leading south of Foran, with the Royal Rangers patrolling it regularly. There's very little robbery.
Royal Rangers?
Flano was looking over their horses.
Sounds impressive and protective. I wonder if the Marshal will ever start the same thing here.
Look around you, love. We're it.
Well, without the Royal Guard's colorful banners and a trumpeter.
Thasgar and Gon enjoyed the still hot hunks of meat torn from the rabbits hanging over the fire.
It should stay quiet, especially after we get past Raven Point.
Gawain poked at the meat with a knife, seeking portions that were more done.
The weather is already starting to get cold in the mountains, so any highway robbers will start holing up closer to Hopetown or south around the coastal villages along the bay.
2 quiet days had passed as the group progressed along the westbound road toward the dwarven village of Raven Point. The mundane travel diverted only by a brief encounter with the last band of armed scouts Marshal Garnett had sent to keep track of Calron. Noting their report that the Dark Mage had veered northward off the road, Gawain sent them home and kept the group on a southwesterly bead, reasoning that their quarry was probably just trying to throw off his scent and would soon return to the direction he had been following all along. In either case, the magical beacon ingrained in the shackles on Calron's wrists would keep their pursuit accurate. Gawain looked around the fire and waited for any other questions concerning the road and their quarry. When there were no more, he put the matter aside and found a piece of rabbit cooked to his liking, cutting off some and offering it to Glink first. Having been sitting beside him eyeing the cooking carcasses, the mudcat needed no prompting and tore into the meat hungrily.
How far on the other side of Raven Point is your parents' village, Flana?
Roughly a day or two.
Flana checked contents of a saddlepack.
Come eat something before I have to fight off Gon.
He wouldn't dare.
You're right.
Gon snapped twigs into suitable sizes for his favorite game with Thasgar, who was collecting various pebbles that were within reach. Returning from a perimeter walk, Clough was heading toward the campfire to join his friends when he felt the all-too-familiar prickling of foreboding on the back of his neck. He froze, reaching out with all his senses into the area surrounding their camp. The forest and road seemed quiet as it settled into the even. Scanning shadows with his eyes, he lighted on a tree trunk and shimmied his way up to the first branches as he sought better sighting distance. And yet, though he spent long moments probing the deepening darkness, he could find nothing. The smell of roasting rabbit quivered in his nostrils, and he relented to the pangs of his empty belly, dropping back to the forest floor and muttering dissatisfaction with his ability to find what it was that had tickled his sixth sense. Knowing forewarned is forearmed, he would mention this to the others.
Perhaps the forest along the road isn't as peaceful as it seems.
Gon debated whether or not to shove another chunk of wood onto the glowing coals, then decided it wasn't really necessary, for it wasn't very cold yet.
Nah.
Besides, he preferred the dark while he was on watch.
It's one thing to be short and unseen, quite another to be short and lit up like a beacon.
It was later that night, during the time commonly referred to as second watch, the night's duration usually being broken into four watch periods, Gon's turn guarding the camp. Clough's warning earlier that evening kept his wits sharper than usual, and he frequently passed an eye into the surrounding bowls, his ears keening for anything unusual. It was comforting to know that the elf, being unable to sleep, had posted himself somewhere overhead on a tree branch, though Gon had been unable to spy him. Suddenly, Gon's own breathing seemed to him very loud, and he clutched his hand on his axe. Too well he knew the unpredictability of the nightly insects, their chirping subject to being fast in summer, slow in autumn, and intermittent among their nests and territories, yet he also knew that, as a rule, crickets didn't all stop at once. Not waiting for a cue from Clough,
wherever he is up there, Asgard. Huh? What?
The archer was quickly awake and alert.
Too damn quiet out here. Right.
He grabbed his bow and notched an arrow as Gon threw sand on the remaining coals of the fire and nudged the rest of the party to wakefulness.
K-1. Later. Abrui.
Look out!
Several luminescent spheres of crimson darted out of the night, finding targets in Gaewon, Fazgar, Abluy, and Flamer. They jerked with the sharp blows to their bodies, as if they were slammed by gigantic fists. In the next moment, the eerie glow of conjured light illuminated the entire clearing, as four mountain men attacked with cudgels and spears. There was little chance of not being seen in the cold, harsh glow of the four greenish witch lights. Everyone scrambled for a defensive posture despite the painful impact of the magical attacks. They were surrounded. Stunned and unable to evoke any enchantment immediately, Gaewon tried commanding at the giants.
Stop!
But he was ignored as large weapons were swung or thrust into the group. Thasgar and Flayna came to their senses quickly, unsheathed blades, then dodged the slow-moving clubs. Thasgar stumbled, however, and caught a partially deflected cudgel in his gut. Overhead, Clough fired arrows as fast as he could, all his shafts finding their marks, looking like feathered thorns sticking out of the giant's shoulders. But his advantage was quickly made perilous as one of the mountain men grew irritated, peered up at the branch on which the elf was perched, and slammed his cudgel against the tree. Clough was forced to leap to safety on the sturdier tree trunk. Knowing mountain men weren't intelligent enough to comprehend the use of magics, Gaewon assumed Calron's hand in this.
Damn it.
With a glance at the hovering spheres of greenish fire, he evoked the enchant for spell reversal, hoping to send the lights back to their caster. The next instant plunged the fray into blackness and confusion, the balls of light dissipating into clouds of light specks that flitted around, then settled onto the mountain men, outlining them clearly. The giants angrily pummeled anything in range of their weapons, which was mostly the ground, tree trunks, each other, and unfortunately, Abluy and Thasgar, who were unable to avoid the blows. The priest involuntarily shifted to his werebear form, which gave him a more matched advantage with the giants, his bear height being near to theirs, and sank his teeth and claws into the closest one.
Thasgar!
Gon sensed his friend down, jumped to Thasgar's side, and swung his axe with all his might into a mountain man's leg. As the werebear tangled with his opponent, the pair smashed against trees in their struggle. With her sword, Flayna cut viciously into the one Gon had engaged, sending the giant limping backward away from the fight. Gawain loosed a cluster of fiery spheres at the remaining two, the battle briefly illuminated by their swift flight into the brute's startled faces. Made them drop weapons and flail hands uselessly over their faces. Another volley from the enchanter sent them staggering backwards, and they were forced to beat an uneven retreat back into the forest, followed by their cohort with the wounds from Flayna and Gon. The werebear continued tearing into the fourth one, who was still limbed by the specks of green light, the hand-to-claw fight in the dark, something out of a nightmare. Ablui's massive bear form was an angry blot of night, writhing over the ghostly outline of the mountain man. Soon the werebear relented, allowing the giant a chance to escape. This he did. Then, at a threatening growl from Ablui's altar form, hurriedly staggered away.
Bastards!
Clough jumped to the ground, notched an arrow, and let it fly.
Clough!
Gawain had channeled everything he could into his last two enchants, the process leaving him momentarily winded.
Hold! Save your strength!
Crab nails. Oh, well, how about some light, Gawain?
A bright sphere of amber appeared, hovering high over the enchanter's head.
What the hell was that all about?
Thasgar sat hunched over his gut.
Waylay us and run?
I wish I knew. Gawain took a brief account of everyone. Flayna looked harried, but was uninjured physically. Gon looked grouchier than he had ever thought possible. And Ablui, where is he? The priest stepped into the light, looking miffed, but all right otherwise. Are you all right, Thasgar? He feared a rupture in the archer's gut.
I'll be fine in a little while. Just hadn't been braced for that blow. I'll get you something to ease your ache.
Gon dropped his weapon and went to fetch the skin of ale for his friend.
Thasgar asked a good question.
Flayna sought something with which to wipe the blood off her sword.
What was that all about? This isn't even Mountain Man territory.
Gawain rubbed his two-day growth of beard as he mulled over the facts, then bent over to pick up his mudcat, who had just returned from a safe hiding place in the woods.
Remember the Mountain Men that came to help Calron's attack on Hopetown? 'Twould seem he's using them again, this time giving them minor spells to use.
I know mages are occasionally hired by the nobility and loan spells and like potions and charms and such, but I never knew one could share magics with simpletons like Mountain Men.
And Calron gave each one of them a spell to use.
That would explain how they approached us without my hearing them. They used some sort of spell for stealth. Damn!
Quite so. An effective combined use of simple spells.
Effectively frightening.
We'll set up trip lines around our camps from now on. Perhaps you would render the lines invisible, Gawain?
Excellent idea, Clough. String one long line around us and leave a mark so you can find it in the morning. Wouldn't do to trip ourselves as we stagger around bleary-eyed.
There you go, Thasgar. Drink up.
The archer downed several large swigs of ale, which quickly eased the ache in his gut.
Thanks, Gon.
I would hope that we shouldn't see those animals again anytime soon. From what I could tell, we inflicted quite a few scars they'll remember.
They discussed the attack for a short while longer before allowing Gawain to extinguish his light and rolled up again for the rest of the night. Sleep didn't come easily, everyone disquieted. At fourth watch, when it was Gawain's turn, the enchanter used his crystal to scry for the mountain men. What he found within the colorful images that spilled faint luminosity over his fingers served as a warning. Somewhere, the mountain men sat in a cave around a large fire and talked fervently over their wounds, anger smoldering in their eyes. They will return. Glad for his foresight, Gawain finished out the night considering various options for their defense. Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2024. Character voices for Episode 19 are performed by Richard Hammer, Kevin Norris, Darcy Aradell, and H, the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Mocha Music, Evan McDonald, Atlas Mason, Chris Haig, Francesco D'Andrea, Florian Sorrell of Tiny Music, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by Mixkit of Victoria, Australia, freesound.org, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.